The theater, the theater.
Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
What's up, dudes?
What's up?
So, am I correct that Scott and I have both Barbenheimered, but you've only Barbied?
I've only Barbied.
Okay.
Yeah. I tried to get Oppenheimer tickets like last week, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do IMAX. Everyone says at least IMAX, and everything was bought for like a week and a half, and I just haven't looked since then, so it's on me. I'm going to see it. I just haven't yet.
And they're extending the IMAX till the end of August, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm going to get in there, I promise.
Yeah.
Get in there. Get in there.
It's
if nothing else, if nothing else, as just like a moment in cinema. Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
It's a very exciting watch. I was sixth row center at the IMAX 70 mil, and it was chef's kiss.
All right. Yeah.
It's beautiful, and everybody's in it. RDJ.
Everyone's in it. All of the actors.
Fucking fantastic, yeah. But Barbie...
Krumholtz.
Yeah. Barbie passed $1 billion.
Barbie passed a bill.
Hell yeah.
That's badass.
Hell yeah.
And we were talking off mic. I think the most badass thing ever was that Margot Robbie, while they were having the pitch meetings, told executives, this will make $1 billion.
Yeah.
And they sort of patted her on the head and was like, well, we'll let you make your movie, but let's not get crazy. And it's like, I'm glad that they...
Margot Robbie.
She's fucking great, and she's so good in the movie, and she's such a great ambassador, like just a good person, you get the sense. And fucking right on. Go Greta
Gerwig.
Great
flick.
Yeah.
See, if you love her, see I, Tanya. I think that was my first Margot Robbie, and she just blew me away.
You know, a lot of people would argue opposite CJ. Now, I love that movie, and I think she's incredible in it.
Yeah.
But almost every time I say that, someone goes, no, that was terrible. She was terrible in that. And I go, what?
What?
No, yeah, you don't understand things.
I mean, maybe
you
it's
don't
also
understand
just,
things.
Maybe it's also just my upbringing. I was like the perfect age when all the shit went down with Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan. So like it was such a pop culture reference that I was so familiar with but knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really into that. But
also Allison Janney in that movie is top tier.
Always.
Yeah. We love it. The Barbie discourse is really intense, right? And there's Bill Maher saying it's women hating. I mean, man hating. Sorry, not women hating.
I mean, my response is, yeah, probably.
Maybe, I guess, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm with it.
But also, no, I think if you watch the movie, it's very purposely not that.
No,
I think that's the
it's
point.
Gentle.
I think they call bullshit.
They call bullshit on men's stuff. But
it's anti-patriarchy. They say the word patriarchy 342 times. That's a real stat, by the way. No, I'm kidding. But it's, you know, box office record for a female director, for a woman director. That's huge. I'm a big Greta Gerwig fan. I've always loved Greta Gerwig. It's sad that this is the first time that it has to be this massive IP. But it's also like, great. I'm so glad it's happening and that it's this movie. Saying what it's saying.
Go ahead, Siege.
Well, I was just about to say the downside of all of this, and it was a conversation I got into with the people I went to see it with immediately afterwards, was now Mattel is like, we're going to release all these titles. Like, there's a Polly Pocket movie in the makings, and I just want to be like, no, I don't want any of that. I just wanted Barbie.
No.
That's all I wanted.
It won't do the same. Yeah, it won't.
No. Well,
and I think all those other things are going to cheapen Barbie, in my personal opinion. But anyway,
unless they get auteur directors to do every one of them, and then I'm like, sure, Chloe Zhao does Polly Pocket.
What are you going to say with Polly Pocket? Just about being small? Like,
might be about size. Yeah, size matters.
Size queens.
It's about size queens.
Size queens. It's
I'd
the whole
the
thing
that
executives are going to get the wrong message. The message isn't that people want movies about toys. The message is make movies by and for women and girls, and maybe you'll find an audience. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, we already have Toy Story. We don't need movies about toys. We don't.
Well, J.J. Abrams is doing the Hot Wheels movie.
Well, I was about to say.
Don't we already have Cars? One through three?
But Hasbro and all of those people are, I mean, ever since Transformers really is the problem here.
Yes.
Yeah, but Transformers is what created this issue. Yeah. Because they're like, oh, shit. These old toys everybody loves? So then they make the G.I. Joe movies, which now, not to spoil, I'm going to spoil it because who fucking cares? New Rise of the Beasts movie, the new Transformers movie.
Yeah. Okay.
The final moment of the film, not the credit sequence, the final, the ending moment of the film is Anthony Ramos, who's been like wearing a Transformer as an outfit for most of the movie because this Transformer dies, but like makes an outfit out of himself so that Anthony Ramos can wear it. It's actually kind of cool. But he's running around in this thing, and then the final moment, someone comes out. It's like Stanley Tucci or fucking some great actor that you're like, why are you using this person for this? And he pops up and he's like, hey, I need to recruit you for this other thing. And then he hands him a piece of paper and it says G.I. Joe. And you're like, what? So now they're going to start crossing all those Hasbro movies in with each other. And I'm just like, okay, we don't need this. We sure don't.
Give me a Popple movie. I want a Popples movie.
Stupid. Sounds bad. And then we have Trolls. And then we have all these things. But
you're reminding me of all the terrible toy movies
but
out there.
Barbie, I would argue, is not a movie about toys.
No.
And it's more a movie about the concept of Barbie. And I want a huge shout out to Mattel for letting them just read them for filth. Because that movie does read Mattel for filth, which I love.
My personal hot take on this movie, and it makes me take that credit away from Mattel, is I really think this movie, I loved it. I loved it from top to bottom. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. I think it would have been way more cool if it happened 5 or 10 years ago. But I realized there was all kinds of hurdles and copyrights and all kinds of fucking shit. But that's
just and so many people had their hands on it and tried, like, what's her name, and tried to write one. And that, who am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Female comedian has her own show. Amy Schumer.
Of course. There was a
Schumer
Barbie
had tried it
script
and
going
she'd
around.
Had
I forgot
it for
about
a while.
That.
And yeah.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah.
Well, noted quote unquote voice of reason Joe Rogan is someone who has been sort of like, wait, why is everyone mad about this movie? Which is kind of nice.
Except he's also like,
also
don't
guy.
Get vaccinated because I'm an
anti-vaxxer. I'm not defending Joe Rogan. It's just a funny thing that pops up if you Google it.
I do kind of dig the Joe Thank Rogan you, in the middle of all the noise and all the assholes and
being like,
who's the king
I
of noise?
Yeah, he's like, I don't get why you guys are mad. It's kind of good. And you're like,
it's kind of good.
The
I had a good time.
Joe Rogan.
Made me think about some things. Made me think about myself.
Go call Elon Musk and fix that problem, please. Thank you.
Also, your RFK episode. Like, he interviewed him for 4 fucking hours about anti-vax. Anyway.
Okay. Why are you... So are you listening to him? Is that what you're
saying? No, I listen to all the people that cover all the right-wing shit. That's why I know.
Ah, welcome to Theater. The theater podcast for theater nerds made by 3 theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
'Tis true, and each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And we're back to our original format, discussing the evolutions of the great playwrights by taking a macro look at 3 of their plays in the hopes to get you to read them, engage with them, things like this. This is part 3. This is the end. Mm-hmm. End of an era of our mini-series covering the works of Martin McDonagh. This is 3 podcasts outside Ebbing, Missouri. We already covered Beauty Queen of Lenan and The Pillow Man, and this week we're covering Hangmen, a more recent offering from Martin, Marty McDay. And it's a very interesting play. It's very, I would say, pretty different from the other two that we've covered, but also still very Marty.
Very much.
Still very Marty.
Oh, yeah.
It's still, I don't know, I felt it, I feel like Pillow Man is the one that stood outside for this.
I guess
this
that's
true. And Lenan felt similar to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Esque.
In the way that this is, they're both more grounded in a sort of reality and
specific, they're in a specific place too. Like,
sure.
Maybe I'm saying this too because I actually sat down and watched Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri last night.
Nice.
And he, and also thinking of Banshees of Inisherin, like, he gets the small town thing well.
Sure.
And I kind of put that in that file for this.
Yeah. I think it was more talking about, like, so rather than, like, format or anything like that, like, it is, everything he's done before this has been Irish or American or nondescript, like Pillow Man. This is his first British, English-based play, technically. This is his first, like, we're in England currently.
Sure.
And then this is kind of his first time writing about something real.
Yes. Ish.
Well, right. Like, he has written things in response to
things. It's in a specific year. It's in 1963, that's
right,
for sure.
Right, right. Yeah. But he, you know, he wrote, I think it was Cripple of Inishmen, where it was in response to that bombing,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. But it's not about the bombing, whereas this is in response to the end of the death penalty and capital punishment in England,
mm-hmm.
and him sort of, like, talking about that, and we'll get into all that and whatever.
Sure.
But interesting play. I think it'd be fun to talk about.
Yes.
CJ.
Yeah.
I think we should have a discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been seeing your therapist regularly?
I haven't seen her for like a month. I could probably use a session, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, could. I mean,
I'm just saying.
I am turning 39 tomorrow, so.
Yeah. Well, don't. That's a big year, 39, you know? And we wouldn't want you to have a breakdown.
CJ's
breakdown.
That was a bad segue, and I'm sorry.
No, it was great.
Harry actually, Wade's... it was good.
Okay.
Harry Wade's career as an executioner is cut short when hanging as a punishment in the UK is suspended in 1965 and later abolished in 1969. He also owns a pub with his wife, Alice, who he has his daughter, Shirley, with. Cronies and a newspaper reporter ask him about his past exploits. Questions of wrongful accusations and deaths come back to haunt him.
I love cronies.
The cronies. I love that he describes them as the cronies.
It's very
specific. And the fucking stage directions he gives them, it's like, he's telling you, I feel like they are the most specific characters in this play, to be honest.
Mm. And it gives it almost like a noir mob movie feel to me. Mm-hmm. When I read a word like cronies, I'm like, yeah.
Oh, it just made me think of, we have one bar in my hometown. It's called something else now, but it used to be called Sleepy's, and it's where the farmers went. They went for coffee in the morning, but then it was a bar at night, and the same people went there all day, and they smoked there until the health department came in and was like, you really, really cannot smoke inside anymore.
Like hell I can.
We are going to close your bar down.
Oh,
but it reminded me of Sleepy's because the same people show up every time, and
it's
the same assholes, you know?
Yeah.
But I get the mob boss thing, too. That's kind of a fun way to think of it.
Like,
I like
it's
that.
Not that, but it kind of, yeah.
No, I like that. It's cool.
It premiered at the Royal Court Theatre in London in September 2015. Good year for wine.
True.
Also, our final year of Obama.
I guess it's true. Well, no, 2016 was.
I know. I guess I meant more like the year before everything went back.
Yes.
But then it transferred to the West End Wyndham's Theatre, directed by Matthew Dunster, designed by Anna Fleischel, which apparently the set was absolutely incredible.
The pictures I've seen are, wow. Like, it was detailed.
Yeah, like, the pub is a pub on stage, you know, and, like, it very much very real places on stage, but then also apparently the transitions were really cool, how everything would warp into a new place. They didn't just put, like, part of the, you know, the pub over here, stage right, and the jail cell over here, and, you know, they didn't do that. They went straight up, like everything would shift and the whole stage would become a new place.
Which
sounds cool.
I love that shit.
Sounds really
great design. Goes a long way.
Yeah. So it got a lot of love there. It got a lot of, we'll talk later about everything it was nominated for and whatnot. But then it made its way to Off-Broadway in 2018 and was considered for the Critic Circle Award. Oh, it won, excuse me, the New York Drama Critic Circle Award for Best Foreign Play. But yeah, 2015. What were you guys doing in 2015? What's happening in 2015?
2015. Cool? I'm doing some show. Oh, I did. I think I was at the Playhouse in 2015.
That sounds right. Doing Stoneface.
Doing Stoneface.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, right around there.
All I can think of in 2015, I was 31, and it was my sluttiest year I've ever had. I slept with the more people I ever slept with in my 31st year.
Yes.
That's all I can remember about that year.
So that's your context for When Hanging. I love that. Had either of y'all seen or engaged with this play at all?
No.
No, not before this. Either. And I have to say, I was very nervous when I cracked it open. Because you had hyped it so much, Bailey. And I'm like, you were just like, man, have you read it yet? I don't know. Like, you just hyped it up to, like, excited me.
All I was saying, I wasn't trying to hype, because I know you're super sensitive to hype, which is so interesting to me, because I'm not. I'm sort of like, great, you feel what you're going to feel. I'm going to have my own opinion. But with this one, I was just trying to say, as an evolution, it does feel, you can feel the 2000s-ness of Pillow Man. Mm-hmm. Whereas Hangman feels like it has evolved out of that time. Yeah. I don't think, I hope I didn't ruin it for you, because
no, not at all.
I don't think it's a better play. I just think it's interesting to watch that evolve.
Yeah, I was very surprised. It leads into, he doubles down. We talked last week about what I thought was the thesis of Pillow Man, which is it's a riddle without an answer,
right?
Which is one of the lines.
A puzzle without an answer.
A puzzle without a solution.
Yeah.
And that's very much this play. Yeah. Like the questions I kept asking, like after I'd finished it last night, like I think I read half of it on Sunday and half of it last night, and then I was like, wait a minute, we never find, like, at first you're like, we should say, without ruining too much, the play starts with a prequel scene, if you will,
sure,
where he's doing a hanging, and the guy that he's hanging, Hemmings? Declares is keeps saying I'm innocent,
right?
And there's this question that kind of floats for a while, but then that question disappears. We never get any kind of clarity on that question. It's this what if he was. And then you have Mooney, who might be one of the best characters he's created.
Absolutely.
Solely,
I love Mooney.
Mooney's just fucking brilliant, and you're like, and his turn of phrase and his clear psychopathy is crazy and intense and all that, but then you don't know really what that motherfucker did or why he's even involved with it,
right?
Why he poked his nose and showed up, nobody really ever finds out. How he and Sid, the assistant, never we don't know quite how they hooked up. We know that they did, but why, we don't know. And like, it's that enigma in his writing that's so, and he does it in Beauty Queen of Lenan as well. Like, and he does it in Banshees of Inisherin and Three Billboards even, like, where it's just like, I don't know exactly. Like, he's making you process. You have to think about, what are these themes? What's the point? What are we supposed to be meditating on? And it's just fascinating how well he does it and how funny it is. How funny it is on the page.
For me, I feel like after having consumed Beauty Queen and Hangman and Pillow Man and then watching Three Billboards last night, I feel like out of those four things, Pillow Man was this kind of departure from what he usually does. And I feel like those three, for me, those three pieces were, every time you think you've got a handle on what this is about or what question is being answered, literally by the next scene, it's not about that. It's about something else or something completely different. Or he throws another piece of information at you that's completely different. And I felt like, for me, Hangman was a perfection of what he was trying to do in Beauty Queen of Lenan.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but that was my take on
it. I'd be interested to have you to see what you'd think after reading some more of the trilogies, though.
For sure.
Too, because I think he's... I can see that. I see what you mean in some ways, but I think he... What you're saying is also is more true to me, that he writes really well in this sort of didactic, very real... real, but with like a sense of absurdity without it being like, I don't know how to say that differently. It's like,
well, like it just makes me think of like especially Three Billboards last night. Like, there are things constantly happening and there are things that people are doing that they are constantly getting away with. Whereas like, if this was in reality, this person would have been arrested within hours or the next day. Mm-hmm. That story would have been over, but it doesn't happen here. Mm-hmm. People let it go or it kind of just fades away. And then it just makes everything more complex and confusing. And
well, it's sort of like he's less bound to law, which makes his stories more interesting. He's sort of right. Like, yeah, but that's not the story I want to tell. Yeah, obviously that's probably what would happen in reality, but I'm not telling that story, right?
Sure.
Which I think is great. But he's still, all of those pieces that you're talking about, minus Pillow Man, are set in a reality we all can know and understand.
Sure.
And can recognize as like, cool, we're in a family home, and or we're in a pub, or we're in a whatever. And I know where I am, and right. There's a concrete realness to everything that's happening here. Whereas Pillow Man has that side of, but, like, is this a real prison? Is this a, where are we?
Here's my thing with Pillow Man. The whole time in this, I was like, there are two things that are going to happen. We're either going to find out that he and or his brother committed these crimes, and we're going to discover what's happened to these victims. I knew that from the top going in. I knew it was going to be fucked up. I knew it was going to be disturbing, and I was gearing up for that. I didn't feel that way with these. With these, I was just like, I kind of came in at the beginning, and I was like, okay, this is what I'm ready to figure out. And then I didn't figure that out, or I figured it out in a way that I didn't think I was going to from the beginning.
I think he's doing something that is... something you kind of need to do for theater. Obviously, the Pillow Man hit people in a really provocative way.
Yeah,
even though
absolutely.
It is dark,
it hit
as
me
what
in
it
that
is.
Way too.
Right.
Yeah.
But everything else he's written that I've engaged with anyway, there's a bluntness to it. Like especially Three Billboards and In Bruges does too. There's like a bluntness to like, this is what we're saying, or like, this is the question we're asking, right? But there's this play and a lot of his other plays is a little bit more looser. It's a little bit like, It's asking a question. It's posing some questions. It's not really saying an answer. It might give you a plot answer, but it's not really thematically saying, like, and here's the bow that you need to tie this
no,
up.
No, he definitely doesn't. And
yeah.
I'm also fascinated by how he uses language to create the absurdity. Like I was at Christmas time, I was at a big airport in Atlanta, and just listening to conversations between like these two couples, that was just the craziest. I was like, if you extract this and just play this as a conversation or just did this, it would be the most fucked up, weirdest fucking thing.
Right.
Where they're pulling the references from. And you can tell in a way. Who else? August Wilson does it, where he's got such a distinct ear for language. Sure. And is able to put that on the page. And McDonough can do that as well. And he does it by...
the absurdity of reality.
The absurdity of reality and the absurdity
the
right. of how words and conversations create
right.
that. You know, you look... Like, it took me a little bit in Hangman to get into the rhythm of him writing that distinctly Northern British accent, Northern
sure.
English accent, but he gets so much funny out of it. And mm-hmm. it's the rhythms, it's every little word. And he does it in Ebbing too.
Right.
I really want to read, whatchamacallit now? What's the play that he has set in America?
Oh,
it's just Spokane one.
Yes.
The Handing
yes.
in Spokane. Yeah.
Yeah. where you can tell, like, he went to America the first time and his ear was probably just buzzing, like, having been an Englishman raised by Irish parents and spending time in Ireland and hearing those voices and the distinction. Like, I can identify with that. Like, I was born in West Virginia. I've mentioned that before on the podcast, but I would go and I would spend summers with grandparents and family and then come back home. And my parents were always like, you've picked up that goddamn accent, that horrible accent. And I did, like, you, it's a fascinating thing to be able to switch like that and use language like that to create this sort of otherworldliness that's just so engaging. Like, I just tore through all three of these plays, like, really quickly. Mm-hmm. I was like, phew, phew, phew. And that's one of the things that just I admired the most about it. Now I want to see them. Yeah, now I want to do them.
I want to do them all. Yeah, no, I really, I texted you guys sort half jokingly, like, okay, so we're doing a Martin McDonagh play next year. I have always enjoyed More Disturbing Fare, Sarah Kane, you know, this kind of stuff. And I think he's a nice bridge towards Sarah Kane without being a Sarah Kane. And, you know, Carol Churchill and Sarah Kane are writing in a more surreal absurdity. He's not. He's not really doing that. But like you were saying, Scott, he's writing to the absurdity of reality. But he pulls way more comedy out of it than Sarah Kane ever did.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I would even argue more than Churchill. I mean, Churchill has, I mean, there's some great stuff in all of her shit that is very funny, but almost kind of like smart funny or even sad funny. Whereas every person could watch a McDonagh play and get something out of it. There is a populism to his work, even though it's like an art house populism. It's like this mix between both, and I think that's fucking exciting.
It really is. Like, and I can't wait for, because this was his last play, right? This is 2015.
Technically, I think he has. There's one more.
I mean, he's had movies since then.
Behanding might be since then, actually. Hold on, let me check, because I know there's one other that he's been working on. But what were you saying?
Well, just that I can't wait for his next one. I can't wait to see what he's doing next and seek it out, and you know.
Very, very, very Dark Matter is 2018. He writes in 2018 and only got, I think, to Broadway in 2020 or off Broadway maybe. Nope, it only did Bridge Theater in London. That's all it's done. And that's the Hans Christian Andersen. Jim Broadbent played Hans Christian Andersen.
Right.
And Phil Daniels played Charles Dickens. So I bet that fucking ruled.
Jesus.
Jesus. I own that play. If you want to borrow it, I own
a
copy of it.
That sounds like right up my fucking alley.
For sure. I wanted to talk about this, and I'm going to talk about it through another piece. Because I don't want to give away the ending of this play.
Mm.
So, well, CJ set it up really nicely with her breakdown. It's which, are you doing okay, Siege, after that breakdown? You doing all right?
Doing okay.
That was a massive breakdown.
Yeah.
we're here for you. We love you.
Yes.
But you set it up properly. It's, you know, it's these hangmen who have lost their jobs because of the ending of capital punishment in England, right? And sort of the way that he starts this piece is by being like, that's the kernel idea, is like all these men who had killed like hundreds of people, hundreds of people. In fact, we're following the second best hangman in the land.
Yeah.
Well, and the first best hangman is a character, which is
Pierre Palm. Yeah, we meet him later, which I think is hilarious.
Yes.
But there's something kind of Monty Python about that, or something kind of, I don't know what that is, but it's very funny.
That very British humor. Very
Well, and you can view that guy as fun because he hung a bunch of Nazis at Nuremberg.
Yeah. Right. But there's a spookiness, there's a darkness too, about those people. Then when they lost those jobs, they were still murderers the rest of their life. They still did what they did, whether it was by law or not. They have to go home to those 200 souls that they potentially killed, which is what this is sort of tackling. And that was the spark that set this all off for McDonagh, was that thought what kept running through his head. And he was like, that's an interesting play. So he went with it. But I wanted to talk about the ending without giving away the ending. And I want to do that by talking about the namesake of this miniseries, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah.
CJ, you watched it last night.
Yeah. Can I tell you my one big gripe?
Yes.
It looked awful Smoky Mountains instead of Missouri.
You're right.
And I looked it up, and they did film in the Smoky Mountains. And yeah, maybe it's just me being a stuck-up Midwesterner, but I get getting away with the town that you have and the people you have and the storylines that you have being tucked away in the mountains, but there's something creepier about it being out in the flat, wide open to me.
Right.
That if they had done it in the plains,
yeah,
where you can see forever, but whatever. It was beautiful. It was beautiful scenery that they filmed.
Right. And there
anyway,
is no Ebbing, Missouri, right? So he's right, kind of building a, just like there's no Inishmore, right? There's no Inishirin. I don't think those are real places. I think there are places called that, but they're not technically
real. They still
real.
Filmed
Am I wrong?
In Ireland.
Right, yeah. Right. No, that's true. But I think there's, and he would say, well, we still filmed in America.
Sure. No, right? Listen. But, I was being nitpicky.
No, I get it. But I think you're correct. I think especially being from Kansas. I mean, I'm just like, I'm a little bit like, there's more prairie than that in Missouri. Push up my glasses. But yeah, still very interesting. But the ending of that film.
Yeah.
I would relate to the ending of this play in that there is this just very sober discussion of what has transpired happening between two of our characters. And I think that's a hard way to end a play. And I think mm-hmm. that's a hard way to end a movie. And I think a lot of people reacted really poorly to the last 10 minutes of Ebbing.
You know what my reaction to the end of Ebbing was, though?
Hmm.
It was kind of this unlikely friendship
right.
that bloomed. Yeah. That's what the end of that movie was to
100%.
Me.
100%.
Absolutely.
Especially with like how you... For me personally, you fucking loathe Sam Rockwell's character.
Right.
He's
right.
such a drunk, racist piece of shit
right.
the whole time. And he's still a drunk, racist piece of shit, but he kind of comes around. I should have some conversations with people because I watched it in a safe little
it
bubble
goes,
here.
Yeah, that whole movie's about the nuance of humanity, though.
Yeah,
right? Like,
yeah.
You hate everyone at some point in that movie, yeah.
And it's about, you know, the steps. It's you know, A Christmas Carol is the ultimate redemption story. It's like a
sure.
perfectly constructed story.
Scrooge's
but it's always
part, yeah.
a little unrealistic that somebody's going to completely change their person. I like it when you see a movie where there isn't that dramatic shift, but there is that step towards trying to be decent or find
right.
a decency.
That's
know?
What I love. I love that too. And that hope for, you talk about this a lot, Scott, the hope at the end of the play of like the potentialities of what comes.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see, and this might already exist, I would love to see a play called like The Day After Christmas. And it's about Scrooge the
it's
day
called
after.
Boxing Day.
And he's, yeah. but it's literally just like, maybe he's not as joyous that day. And then each day,
nobody is.
It gets kind of worse and worse. And then it's sort of like all he wants is to get back to the next Christmas. But in doing that, he sort of loses that magic that he had.
Write it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to write it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
CJ, you can play Scrooge. Scott, you can play Cratchit, and it'll be beautiful.
I mean, that is to say, like, I'm Tiny Tim. I'm idealizing this, like, developed relationship at the end of Ebbing, Missouri as they're driving to possibly murder somebody. So I guess in my head I was like,
right,
no,
well,
they're going to decide by the time they get there that they're not going to kill him. I've decided.
Yeah, keep it hopeful. But that was the thing, you know. Like,
well, and that character is similar to Mooney in this, I think. The guy that they're driving
agreed.
To see. Yeah, sorry, go Scott.
No, you're right.
I absolutely agree. And some of the casting, like some of the reviews I read of productions of the performance, I guess Alfie Allen from Game of Thrones.
Ooh,
yeah,
Leon Greyjoy.
Did a hell of a job on Broadway or off Broadway. And it makes you actor horny, you know, to read that part. It's like, oh, man.
Well,
and
all
of them do. All of the parts do. But that one in particular is just out of
I just wanted to clear up because in Beauty Queen of Lenon, I misread it a little bit. And Leggett, you were totally right that the relationship wasn't consummated in Beauty Queen of Lenon. They didn't fuck.
Well, did you I'm sorry. Did you just say I was correct?
Yes, you were correct. Whoa. I went back and read the letter because I wanted to be. I liked the play so much. I wanted to understand it correctly, and that
it's a real subtle thing, you know.
That makes the love letter even more nice, in my opinion.
Yes, yes.
But also, in this, Mooney admits to. Well, and you kind of find it out from the daughter when she comes in, unless she's completely fucking lying, that they slept together.
I wasn't quite sure, I'll be honest
with
you.
That's the impression I got.
I definitely knew that they hooked up, but I guess...
Which is still, it's to me, in it's any... creepy she's no still matter 15. What, she's 15. Creepy. It's creepy.
Yeah, and he's distinctly described as 30. I don't know, Bailey, what did you think? Did he bone her? I hate to say it like that, but like...
What was the question again? I'm so sorry.
Mooney actually hooked up with Shirley, the daughter, when she shows up at the end.
Oh, no.
Like,
I
we're wondering if he's kidnapped her and all this shit. And...
I took it as a bunch of lies.
From both of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I batshit?
No, you're not. I think it could be whatever you want. I'm trusting what the characters are saying as they're walking on stage, which... Maybe my folly in a lot of shit that I read.
You compared this to Lanon, Beauty Queen of Lanon, and there's that side of Beauty Queen of Lanon where both people tell stories, and you never really know if either one is true,
sure.
But then you kind of assume some things about each one are true, but then you kind of realize maybe
something
neither
in the
one
middle
was
is
true.
The truth.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I kind of felt that here. Because Mooney you can't trust, right? That's, we can't, we have no reason to.
No.
We have
so
no
already
reason
not,
to.
Yeah.
But the fascinating thing is we don't know fuck about him at all.
Right.
He
he's
just
a
comes
pure
in
stranger.
Like this.
Exactly.
And he's just this force that just fucks with them all. And again, he gives you so much room as a theater artist to go, oh, what am I doing here? What am I saying here? What did this guy really do? What is this guy's relationship to?
Is it the birthday party where the dude shows up?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And no one knows why, and we have really no context for it. And
right.
All
the two guys show
about?
Up. The two guys.
Yes. It's birthday. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Mix something and
it's
the other.
Very,
guy.
Very.
It's
yeah.
Kind
yeah,
of like that in a weird
yeah,
way.
Yeah. He's very. This is very Pinterest.
It is
very
Pinter.
Much. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Which he holds hands with Pinter and Beckett in a lot of ways. I think we can feel that in more than just the British Irish sensibility. I think there's a kinship there for sure.
Well, even Stoppard,
and
McCann
and
Goldberg, those are the two characters.
McCann and Goldberg. Thank you. Yes. That's right. Fuck.
What
a good miniseries. Our Pinter miniseries is
slapped.
Good, y'all. Go listen to it.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Slap.
Rules.
I think too. The more we talk about it, the more that this play, you know, Pillow Man was about telling stories. I feel like a lot of this play is about the skeletons in your closet.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, right. The
if you're ignoring them, if you're dealing with them, what's going to happen if you're all of a sudden faced with them? Like,
yeah, and if Beauty Queen of Lanon is about like collective trauma and generational trauma and things like this is about like trauma from the choices you made yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like
hell
not
yeah.
Based on like what's happened in the past, but like what have you done?
Right.
And then how is it affecting other people, including
yeah,
her 15-year-old
exactly.
fucking daughter? You
yeah.
know?
Right.
Oh,
well, probably. And it's also so much about ego. There's a lot of cockwaving in this. Like, there's a lot of, like...
Yeah.
Ooh, those scenes... I have to tell you, the last time I was back in Illinois, there was one night that I went to somebody's garage to drink. And it was me and two guys I went to high school with, and one of the guys' wives. And the entire time I was sitting there, the husband was constantly talking about how stupid his wife was in front of all of us.
Oh,
and I kept calling him out and it made me really uncomfortable, but that's what all of the crony scenes reminded me of.
I
felt so bad for her the whole time.
Well, but
you're
talking about, I mean, that's exactly what you're saying, CJ. I've been in that room so many times.
Yeah.
Where everyone's sitting there like, what the fuck? You know? But or you're the only one sitting there thinking that. And everyone else
that's
is
my
totally
experience whenever I go
about
home.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. That's Kansas in a nutshell. That's the Midwest in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rough. What else?
I just wanted to talk just a moment about Harry and his complete lack of evolution.
As we
do our series about it. But that
he is not different at the end of this play.
No, and that he just is a blowhard, and he's spent, you know, it's make self important and cruel, and but always sort of demands sort of the respect and sort of holds this sort of ethical, moral high ground, like he was doing a good thing, you know, and he's completely deceitful. Then we meet Pierrepont,
the actual best
hangman ever,
right?
And our best hangman in history, and how he fucking
in the land
and lays him to waste, just like bitch slaps him in front of all of his friends.
Well,
like,
you know what? You know who Harry reminds me a little bit of is fucking Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman. It's like the death of a career, of something that he was quote unquote good at, that he was important for, that people asked for him for, and all of a sudden it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just sitting in his pub, living up the good old days and talking about how great it is. And he's obsolete at this point and mm-hmm. will be obsolete. And now is having to look at the consequences of mm-hmm. that job and the mistakes he's made and the mistakes that criminal justice has made, obviously. But like, yeah, I'm not saying it's just like Death of a Salesman, but that character kind of reminds me of that. Yeah. Living it up in the heyday that does not exist anymore.
No, it's basically a retelling of Death of a Salesman.
He's mean to his wife, just like Willie Loman.
That's true. The cronies.
A director question.
Mm.
Because as I read it, the first instruction is that as the play goes, that everybody keeps rolling along in terms of the words, in terms of the speech and all that. Do you direct it as a farce?
Hmm.
Like, it's so funny. Like, it's like, somebody's going to have to walk through that door right now. Boom, the door opens and somebody who does walk through that. Like, all those farcical things are played into here.
I think you have to. And I don't think you need to go full cartoon.
No. I think it needs to remain grounded, but it should be farce.
Yeah,
tempo.
It's almost like it should feel like The Great Race or like Mary Poppins or like one of those old Disney epics that's like there needs to be like a clip to it that's like fun and funny, but it can't be like way too big, but it, mm-hmm. there needs to be a bigness to it, and I would direct it at the pace and clip of a farce. Yes. Mm.
Almost like a sitcom.
Yes. I think you have to, or it's dead in the water. I think it gets boring real quick.
Real quick.
Because, I mean, you have this, even the basic joke of like, Harry Wade is the second best hangman in the land, and Pierrepont is the first best hangman in the land. Like, there's already a farcical nature there that you can lean into. But I think you also have to be grounded. It's too dark to start going towards like true silliness or anything like that.
Right.
I had a logistical / mechanical question, mm-hmm. and I figured y'all would know better than me. The mechanics of hanging someone on stage, is it a thing that is always thrown and suggested off stage? Is it a shadow? Is it a lighting thing? Or is there an actual stage choreography thing to hanging someone on stage? And would you actually do it? Especially in a show called Hangmen.
I've seen it done, whatchamacallit. I've seen it done with a vest or a harness. You basically set up a contraption It hooks into the back. So the rope goes taut, and then there's no tightening.
Then you just act.
There's no tightening of the actual noose-neck part.
I've also seen a lot of mannequins drop, like, from the top of
Like Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Do with Joseph Buquet.
Right. I've seen a lot of that kind of stuff. But I think the best part of the way he's written, especially this script, but all of his scripts, And it's sort of the Sarah Kane problem, is he's sort of like, y'all figure that out. More talented people than me.
Yeah.
Well, and they kind of suggested, especially in that first scene, that you see him on stage and then they kick the door out from underneath him and he drops below stage. So, I mean, he solved that problem for you there. I just was thinking about that, and it just seems like a really sticky wicket to get yourself out of.
A wicket sticky. Of course, the first scene of Cleansed, isn't it, is someone injecting heroin into their eyeball, and then they get carried away by rats or some shit. I don't know.
Smack in a spoon.
Yeah. It's so good. I love Sarah Kane. Should we do another Sarah Kane?
I just described that to someone the other day, and they were like, Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
Like, it's rough. I only read it. I haven't seen it.
I think... any theater company in Los Angeles that has the nuts, that has the ovaries to do fucking Kane is a badass company. The only one I've ever seen do something by her out here is Son of Simile, and it's 4.48 Psychosis, which is fine, but I feel weird about producing that at all. So I'm always like, where are the other ones? Why aren't we doing Blasted all
Fucking brutal. I mean, I feel like Psychosis 448 is the gentlest of all of those plays, but that's my opinion.
If you want it to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's purely director.
Reading it stage directions alone, that's what I'm going off of.
Yeah. Anything else we want to say about Hangman, or should we get the fuck out?
We have stuff to do.
We got stuff to do, but I just mean, should we head towards
that? That's all I got.
Well... That's the three that we're covering. There are many others, and there are a bunch of movies and things like this. But I want to do my favorite part.
What?
Which is where we rank this shit.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
It's true. I love ranking shit. Let's do this. Scott,
I love it.
Let me hear yours first.
Oh, now, God damn it.
We can switch it up, but... you've seen a lot of the movies, so I wouldn't mind also hearing sort of your like movie ranking of his, if you have it. If you don't,
I could do that.
Do you want to give
separate,
a little time?
It's two separate things.
Okay, let me give
let's
a little...
do plays first and circle
okay,
back.
Great.
And I'll, okay,
do that.
I know we always say this is hard. This was really hard. I really loved all three of these plays.
Yeah.
For very different reasons. I'm going to go Beauty Queen of Lenin, Hangmen, The Pillow Man.
Pillow Man is top.
Top, yeah.
Got it. Okay. Siege?
Three, Pillow Man. Two, Beauty Queen. One, Hangmen.
Nice.
How about you,
I'm
going to
say three, Beauty Queen. Two, Hangmen. No, I'm going to switch those. No, I'm going to keep it. Beauty Queen is the bottom. Hangman is the second. Pillow Man is first.
Yeah, Beauty Queen and Hangman were pretty interchangeable for me. I knew from the
beginning
that Pillow Man was going to be three for me, but I did enjoy all three of these, like, tremendously. Yeah. So
I think the writing of Pillow Man, because of that thing I talked about last time where there's that sort of...
it's
2000s nature of it. I considered putting it second or third because I really was jarred by that in a way that was, but then I sort of was able to be like, yeah, shut up, Bailey. Like, it's a good fucking play, and I would prefer to see or work on Pillow Man than I would the other two. Though I do think Hangman, he has evolved a ton. In the writing style. And I also think, and it fits more kind of in the vein of like his movies and things. Beauty Queen of Lenin, I love to death, but you can feel that it's an early play of his in some ways. That's my only take. Anyway, Scott?
I was just going to say, my take is, I think that Pillow Man has all those things that I get horny for. The timelessness, the universality of it. Like, Pillow Man's the one that's going to still be done in 50 years.
Yeah.
I feel, but I don't know. These plays are so interesting. There isn't, this one particularly has a little bit more pop culture reference, you know, referencing things, but it, you know, it nothing that would prevent it from enduring.
We forgot to mention this, and I apologize for this, but the original London production of Hangmen won Best New Play and Best Designer Set Design at the Critics Circle Theater Award. It won a Evening Standard Theater. It won Best Set at the Laurence Olivier, things like this. But then it goes to Broadway, and it gets nominated for Best Play, Best Leading Actor, David Threlfall. Best Performance by a Featured Actor in a Play, Alfie Allen. Best Scenic Design, Anna Fleischel. And Best Lighting Design of a Play. Nominated for all of them, doesn't win any of them.
Huh.
Mm,
but it does win the Theater World Award that year.
It is interesting that Alfie Allen is doing this play, and then Lily Allen, his sister, is doing the Pillow Man right now.
Right. Oh, I didn't make that connection. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Scott, do you have a ranking of his films?
I do. This is a tough. This was a tough one too. I'm gonna go. For pure nostalgia, I'm gonna rank it like this. So we got the four, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen Six Shooter. So the four.
Yeah, doesn't count.
The four big ones. And it's a short. Yeah, you're right. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do three Billboards at number four.
Okay.
Then I'm going to do Seven Psychopaths at number three. Number two is In Bruges, and number one is Banshees.
Okay.
I think there's a distinct evolution there, too, as a filmmaker.
I agree.
That I like a lot. But yeah,
CJ,
that would be my ranking.
You've seen Three Billboards and Banshees, which
I put Banshees 2 and Billboards 1.
Nice. Okay. my ranking, which is so interesting compared to yours, Scott, is bottom In Bruges, then Seven Psychopaths, which I love. I love all these movies.
I do too. Yeah.
Three Banshees, and I think number one is Three Billboards. I love that movie so much.
I'm not mad at you.
I only rewatched Banshees one time. I've rewatched Three Billboards. Of course, it's been out longer, but I've rewatched Three Billboards like six times. I love that movie so much. Yeah.
I went with a buddy to see In Bruges, and it was one of those dude nights where like we went and we had a steak, we had a couple drinks, we took some drugs, we watched that movie and we fucking howled and then just talked about it like for 2 hours straight.
I actually
afterwards.
Think we should watch it together, the three.
Yeah,
ones,
absolutely. It's been a little while. I haven't seen any of them in a while. Banshees is the most recent from last year.
And this is Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. It's his Banshees cast, but in 2008 or something like that. And it's two Irish hitmen, and it's Ralph Fiennes, and it rules.
And a great Ralph Fiennes. Yeah. He's just out of his zone and in a whole different world. I love it. Yeah.
I have another question for you guys.
Yeah.
Do you have any dream roles?
Yeah.
Dream roles.
You dreaming about roles?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I want to play Couturian really badly.
Uh-huh.
I also think I'd be great as either of the Topolsky or Ariel, and I could maybe play Michael. I don't know that I'm right for it, but I like the idea of it. I like that play a lot. I'd like to be in it. I'd like to also maybe play anyone in Hangmen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally anyone in Hangmen. I'd play Shirley, and I don't give a fuck. I love that. Okay. For me,
any of the Pillow Man characters, I think. Topolsky in particular is...
Yeah,
I think
you'd
I would
be a good
kill
Topolsky.
It. I would kill it.
Yeah,
which is
why
I
we
would
should
like...
probably put it up.
But, yeah. You know, okay.
We'll talk about it later.
I also think I could play Harry really well. I think I could. Play
oh,
that
hey,
part
actually, yeah. You should play Harry. I'll play Pierpont.
Okay, right on.
Siege, you can play everyone else.
Yeah. And then I really want to direct Beauty Queen.
Yeah,
I think it's a beautiful
sure.
play. I would love Good to just play. Work with the four actors in a room and just do that play. I just
and a cheap play to produce.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Fun room.
Only need one set. Yeah.
Siege?
Oh, yeah. I had Mag and Maureen and then Couturian, Alice, or even, I'd be even down for one of the cronies.
Oh, yeah. Fuck it. Yeah. Fuck it. That'd be fun as shit. Yeah. Okay, well...
Now, what were those? I'm sorry, Siege, say those again. I missed the first one.
Maureen and Mag are the mother-daughter from Queen of Lenore.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Couturian.
Maureen for sure, yeah, yeah.
And then Couturian, and then Alice, the wife, and then one of the cronies from Hangman.
Give yourself 30 years on the mom and,
yeah.
And mom Banshee. Mag. I mean, not Banshee, Beauty Queen.
Yeah.
But Maureen all day.
Yeah.
We could do that right now.
Let's do it. I'm in.
Perfect I'll play the mom.
Yeah.
Scott can direct. That'll be great. Okay, cool. Well, one day we'll all play all of those roles. It'll be beautiful. But thank you for joining us for this incredible miniseries. It's been so fun diving into him. I'm going to rewatch some of his movies. I've been meaning to and haven't done it yet. I definitely want to rewatch In Bruges with y'all. That'd be super fun.
Yeah, it's
Seven
good.
Seven Psychopaths is also a classic. We could do a whole McDonough night and watch both of them. Oh, that'd be fun.
McDonough night.
McDonough night. Yeah. That was Scottish. What about you? what about you guys? Three podcasts. You enjoy it? Was it fun?
This was a great one. I'd been looking forward to doing covering McDonough for a couple seasons now, and I just hadn't spent a lot of time with him beyond the movies and having read Pillow Man.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, like that was kind of it, and you'd always heard about him, but again, not a lot of people are, at least around here, have been doing it. At least not that I'm aware of. At least not that it's getting any attention.
I feel like it's very theater people theater.
Very theater people theater. Yeah. You know,
I feel like though, if somebody was putting up the Pillow Man out here, it would sell so well.
Hell yeah, I feel like that's the most probably accessible one of his stuff.
I mean, in all honesty, I don't think I've ever seen it being done somewhere out here, because if I had seen that marketing, I would have gone to see it.
Right.
Yeah.
Except I think at Fringe a few years ago, somebody put it up, and I was like, I will not be seeing a Fringe version of this.
No.
But,
no.
Yeah.
I was a little worried that he was going to be Irish Stoppard for me, because Stoppard just did not, he just did not hit for me. I just wasn't into his stuff, and I was worried, and then I ate the stuff up. Like, it was great. So.
Yeah.
I don't regret doing Stoppard, but I really like enjoyed this from beginning to end, and I'm excited to look into more of his stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, y'all. We love you so much. Next week is Theater Nightmares. We've only received one Theater Nightmare in our DMs on Instagram, but
we got one on Facebook.
Oh, good.
We're working on it.
So we'll reach out to some more people. But if you're listening right now, please send us some theater nightmares. This is not nightmares you had while sleeping. These are actual nightmarish things that happened to you during theater rehearsals, tech weeks, performances, any auditions, anything. And then friend of the pod, Kate McDonough, who also has the last name McDonough, but spelled differently, who we had on our Cyrano episode for like a little tidbit. She's going to record a couple stories of her own, because she was like, they're so long and hard to describe, I'm just going to like record it. And I was like, great. So she's going to send us in. So if you want to do that, you can do that too. And we will put it at the end of the episode or at some point in the episode and discuss it, and it'll be great. Cool. That's all I have.
Do y'all have questions or comments? Or also send those stories to our email. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, or X. Facebook X. Or Instagram.
Meta.
Scott.
Twitter.
You can
Twitter
reach
X.
out to us on Meta or X.
Meta X.
Real quick. What is After Theater Nightmares?
It's Scott's pick is next.
Scott,
and then Laundry and Bourbon is after that.
Yeah. Right, I think you made me commit to Oliver.
Oh yes!
I think we're gonna do Oliver.
We're gonna watch Oliver! Exclamation!
It was either
point.
That or I was gonna expose CJ to like Lars von Trier.
Well, we
can
do that.
It's coming, I'm sure.
We can do that because we never did Cook the Thief and the Wife and His Lover. We should do that someday. And then, Lars von Trier. I don't know that I want to cover Lars von Trier on this
podcast. No,
I have a lot of opinions on Lars von Trier.
I do. I really, there's Breaking the Waves is the only one that I truly love and admire. Not love, but really like and admire. It's wrenching in every possible way.
I think Melancholia is interesting. And I think
so much of them are interesting. Yeah. Just...
And there's another one that I think is interesting that I'm blanking on right now. But I think Nymphomaniac is a bad film that's well made, and that's a weird thing,
and
it's like,
and he gets so many
such
good
great performances and actors
but yeah, his relationship
Antichrist,
with women.
That's the one. Antichrist.
Antichrist
is a tough
Antichrist
one.
Is absolutely brutal.
There's
it took
a lot
me like
say.
Three sittings. So anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, Scott, say your shit.
Yeah, I'm going to say my stuff.
And then CJ's is the McClure play, finishing our McClure miniseries technically on Laundry and Bourbon, right?
Yep.
Laundry
and
Bourbon. Okay, go ahead, Scott.
Okay, yeah, sorry. A big shout out to Mr. Ryan Thomas Johnson.
RTJ.
Yes, who writes our theme song, and our theme song is better than your fucking theme song. There,
bitch.
I said it. Ooh,
he said
thank
it.
You.
He said it.
He writes all of our stingers, and he's just one of the best human beings you ever want to meet. Yeah. And then finally, to the great award-winning playwright, Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer. Or yep. some sort of cocktail.
Nice.
Yep.
Rank.
Pigs
Rank.
And Dogs. That was the name of the Churchill play I really loved. Pigs and Dogs. That was a good fucking play.
Yeah.
There's some McDonough in there. Their DNAs are mixed.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways.
Oh yeah.
Cool. Subscribe, rate, review. It really does help. We appreciate you guys. We love you. Okay, bye. Send in your theater nightmares.
Yeah.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, Helen. What's the story? Morning glory. What's the tale? Nightingale. Did you hear about Hugo and Jim? Hi, Maggie. Hi, Alice. It's probably Margie. What's the story?
Margie.
Morning glory. What's the word? Hummingbird. Have you heard about Hugo and Kim? Did they really get pinned? Did she kiss him and cry? Did he pin the pin on? Or was he too shy? Well, I heard they got pinned. Yeah. I was hoping they would. Now they're living at last. He's gone steady for good. Ding, 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 ding. Hello, Mr. Hinkle. This is Harvey Johnson.
Can I speak
to Penelope Ann?
Good.
Bye-bye, Birdie.
Yes, we knew.
Best musical ever.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater. Bring out Louis!
Theater.